Sox on 35th is next. Doors open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Duke Coughlin, and welcome to the Sox on 35th podcast. We are back with another exciting episode covering your vintage Chicago White Sox. As always, I'm joined by our panelist Jordan Lazowski, as Nick Gower is nowhere to be found. Gentlemen, or gentleman, how are we doing?
You know, did you know? So here's my fun fact this week, which I didn't realize. Everyone, I don't know if it's you, but I at least hate the sound of my own voice when I listen to it in recordings and stuff like that. And it's really hard for me to edit a podcast and then listen to it. Most of us, this is the fact, most of us are apparently unhappy with our recorded voices because our recorded voice usually sounds higher pitched than we're used to based on like bone conduction versus air conduction, things like that. I don't know if that's legit the reason I don't like it as much, but that's at least one theory behind it. I guess I'm not alone, but I stumbled across that one, and that was probably the most interesting thing, more interesting than anything with the White Sox this week. So,
yeah, actually, interesting fact. Johnny Depp hates watching any of the movies that he's been in for a very similar reason. Maybe not necessarily the sound of his voice, but like he could literally give the absolute best performance of his career, and he can't watch it. He will.
But see, if I was Johnny Depp, I don't think I'd have that problem. I have this problem because I'm Jordan Lazowski. Like I think, like if I was Johnny Depp, I'd be like, yeah, I have the voice of an angel, and I act like a god. Like to each their own, I guess. But at least even those guys struggle with it. Maybe that's the takeaway.
These bleeding heart entertainers, I tell you, especially the podcasters, they're just the absolute fucking worst. But so we have a really good episode lined up here. Preface, we're actually not going to talk about whatever the hell is going on the south side of Chicago right now. We brought on Ken Smaller, who was making a book, Last Comiskey. It's very, very good stuff. Anybody who is able to be at Comiskey, the original Comiskey Park, will enjoy it, as well as somebody who wasn't born born to new Comiskey Park. I've really enjoyed the content that he's been a part of, so I think it's something we're really going to really enjoy. I think you guys are going to really enjoy it too. But before we get started, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to check out the website, SoxOn35th.com, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SoxOn35th. And without further ado, we are joined by Ken Smaller. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are now joined by the author of Last Comiskey. Genuinely one of my favorite follows on Twitter. Really all the content that he brings out has always been very entertaining. Kind of brings me back to a place of why I'm a White Sox fan in the first place. Brings me back to conversations of my dad talking about old Comiskey Park. Ken Smaller, I just want to say it's a pleasure to have you on, buddy. Like I said in the intro, big fan of your work.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you guys having me. Great to talk about the old days when the current days are not super pleasant for us Sox fans. So,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely there's not a whole lot of positives to take out of what's currently going on with the team. You get all the rumors of the White Sox potentially moving, whether it's into the city or into Nashville. Yet it's always nice to look back on, the historical ballpark that we actually used to have on the south side of Chicago to where we currently are now. So,
yeah, we're going through some repeat times from the mid to late 80s where the team was doing really poorly and these threats were happening. Although, listen, if they do the South Loop move, I'm all for that. I think that would change the whole dynamic of the team. It would add to the fan base. They'd still be on the south side. They haven't had that much success on that corner in the last 120 years. So I'm all in favor of the South Loop move. Nashville, different story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's I actually have some family down in Nashville. And it's funny, for about the last 10 years, they've been convinced every time that I've talked to them that the White Sox are moving down there. So it's... I hate to continue breaking their hearts. Hopefully it's not the case, but I would love to see whether it's in this ballpark or whether it's in South Loop, I'd love to see the team at least stick around. Cause you know, as much as we could sit here and complain about this team, a lot of good memories have come out of spending time at the ballpark. So
listen, it makes you appreciate the good memories when they happen, because there haven't been that many and they're spread out and they're sometimes kind of unusual, funky memories. And that's what Comiskey Park was all about, was having kind of crazy different type of memories, because Bill Veeck was always a believer and, you know, one of the drivers behind some of the changes at Old Comiskey, that you weren't always going to win, so you better have fun in one way or another. And that was kind of what brought me to being a Sox fan really early on. You know, it was a time where the team wasn't that good. I don't think I saw my first win till like my third or fourth game going as a young kid. And instead, you focused on things that were important, like the smell of the popcorn and the scoreboard going off and exploding, and you getting Nancy Faust to play "Na Na Na Na" with all the fans singing along and having the stadium sort of reverberate. Those were like the good days where it almost didn't matter if you won or lost. It felt like you were at a special place. And that, you know, is something that I don't know of Sox fans. I kind of wonder whether you guys feel the same way about New Comiskey, but I certainly have never felt as warm about that ballpark as I did in, you know, the 9-10 years I got to go to the old one.
You know, the way you describe it too, it kind of blends well with your background. I think it's just, it's very detailed. It's things I think a lot of fans miss on a day-to-day basis in terms of just, you know, your background as a Sox fan, how you got there. And now, even now for you getting into both being an author and then having the photography side of things, I guess my question to you would be, how did that sort of love of photography develop? Was it from your experiences early on and, you know, like you said, becoming a Sox fan and going to the ballpark, or where did that really come from?
Yeah. So my dad took me to White Sox games starting in 1977. I was about, I guess, 7 or 8 years old at the time. And he would tell me stories about how his father would take him all the time and show me the same guy that would park the cars, you know, show us where to park and whatnot. And so we would go to games, you know, 8-10 times a year. It's kind of weird because I grew up in the Northwest suburbs and all my friends were Cub fans. And I was just, you know, kind of almost fated to be a White Sox fan. I had a red hat from 1971 from the Dick Allen era. In my crib, I had photos of that. And so that was always my team. And I started going. And the photography started in 1982. The Sox at the time, and I don't think they do this anymore, used to have camera day where the players would come out before the game and two or three of them would kind of hang in packs along the perimeter of the outfield, or the infield, I should say. And I brought my old Kodak 110 camera, which was like probably the size of a thick iPhone these days. And I brought and got photos of Bull Lazinski and Carlton Fisk and, you know, pitchers like Salome Brojas, who everyone thought was going to be the next, you know, Fernando Valenzuela. And it was great. So, like, I got the chance to take my camera and decided, like, you know, hey, let's see if I can get photos of the ballpark, like what I see in Sports Illustrated. And I roamed all around the ballpark. It was the first time my parents let me leave my seat and check out all the different sort of, you know, corners and caverns of the old ballpark. And unlike the new one, you know, the concourse was underneath the stands. So you were in like this hidden little world where you didn't see the game. And you'd walk all around and you'd see things, these dark corners, but you wouldn't expect to see things like a fountain in deep center field that was of some lady in a little, you know, disused fountain for years and decades. And who knows why that was there. Or you could go sit down in the picnic area and just watch the game for a couple innings from the mesh fence right where the left fielder was playing. Or go up and around the ramps near the scoreboard in deep center field and get different angles. So I started to take my camera always to big games. You know, in those days, film was expensive and developing was expensive. So I would take them to the big games, you know, opening day or the Crosstown Classic. Every year the Cubs played the Sox in a one-off exhibition game starting in 1985. And those games were always sellouts. Sox fans cared more about it than Cub fans because of our kind of inherent inferiority complex. And they were always great games. So I always have, you know, a lot of photos of those games, and a lot of them are featured in this book. You know, from about 1985 on, I was bringing my camera every year, every game really, and, you know, wanted to take a picture of every nook and cranny of the ballpark. It continued on to when I went to college and was a photo editor on the student newspaper at Michigan. I would come back every summer and just go to as many games as possible. And when the last season hit, felt like I needed to photograph every nook and cranny of the ballpark. Because if not me, someone, you know, would want to see it in the future, and just felt like we needed to document the memories somehow. And lo and behold, 34 years later, it's become a book. It was part of the documentary, and it's great to share it with younger Sox fans and younger baseball fans.
So I think one of the cooler things about Old Comiskey Park, and my dad used to talk about this area quite a bit, was like the Kingsford like picnic area. Cause that was just, unique compared to what you're going to get at most ballparks. And you know, I always love looking at pictures of it, cause it just seems like it's from a different world almost. You know, you got to understand, you know, I was born in 1995, and I haven't really been able to see things similar to that, especially that close to the field. You know, I feel like there's a lot of ballparks that have like their own areas like that, but to see where that was and kind of see how that was set up, it was so unique to me.
It was something really cool that Bill Veeck added in 1960. He cut out, you know, four openings in the outfield and right field. I don't know if this was always the case, but those were private like party areas. But in left field, you could just go grab your food and sit down and catch an inning or two with a general admission ticket. Anyone could go there. And I made it a point every game to go there, especially because I could, you know, sneak my camera right through the little slats, and I could get the left fielder really up close. People are yelling at them. You know, you don't see those kind of things these days because those are all private corporate areas. And, you know, it's not the same as where you could kind of just roam around. Like, I know a big complaint about New Comiskey on and off over the decades has been, can you go from the top level down to the lower level and just roam around? And you always could do that at Old Comiskey. You could go anywhere you wanted. You know, sometimes the ushers would kick you out now and then, but you could explore, and those little special spots like that were really cool. You know, I got a lot of photos both of that area and from that area in the book. It was one of my favorite spots to always go.
So, you know, you kind of already brought it up already about kind of the motivation behind publishing the book as well. But, you know, obviously with the documentary, which, by the way, it was something I had planned every episode getting released. I was a big fan of it. Pretty sure I was in your Twitter mentions quite a bit every episode telling you how great it was. I really enjoyed every second of it. And I always love seeing Nancy on camera, by the way, because she is just an absolute just gem of a person. I love Nancy Faust. What really kind of got the ball rolling to like kind of make this book as well? You know, I mean.
Yeah. So Matt Flesh, the documentarian who did just an amazing job at putting together the documentary during COVID, and he captured all of the essence of that season in that ballpark. He put out a request for videos and photos on Twitter, and I just luckily saw it. And I said, listen, Matt, I've got 400, 500 plus photos of Old Comiskey. I'm happy to share them, use them any way you want. And he used a lot of them for the transitions or during interviews and you know, areas where he didn't have video footage to kind of cover the gaps, and also on the film poster. So after it came out, you know, I saw maybe 20, 30 of my photos. I really felt like Sox fans would love to see more of these. And they were just sitting in negative sleeves in my storage area, gathering dust. So I started scanning in the negatives. And what was really cool is when you scan in an old photo from a negative, you can restore it really easily. And it looks like a brand new photo a lot of times. So I was able to find these photos that really weren't that good originally because, you know, the light was funny or the shadows were weird, but I could now restore them really easily. And so I talked to Matt last July when we were at the Sabre conference in Chicago and said, listen, we can do this. We can take these interviews and capture the best of the interviews and put them in the book and then have all the photos really match the interview content. And then there were some gaps that I supplemented just to tie it all together. He didn't have anything on Turn Back the Clock Day, which was one of my favorite memories of that season. And a few other things, such as Michael Jordan coming to take his turn at bat and throw in the bullpen late in the season. you know, there are a lot of real special things from that. And lucky for me, I my uncle, who has since passed, my uncle Gary, passed down and let me have his season tickets for the last two games of the year. And I drove in from college and went to those games and probably went through 20 rolls of film, which is a lot of money in those days. And that's really the backbone of the book. I now have about 400 photos of Old Comiskey and a lot of other ballparks of that era, where I'm comparing it and contrasting it to some of the other ballparks, and had a lot of photos of the Sox themselves. You know, it was a great team, and a lot of really colorful characters that was the nucleus of what would have been the World Series championship the year before you were born. But the strike wiped that out.
You know, and I've actually heard quite a bit about that strike year. My dad swears up and down that was going to be the year we were going to win the World Series. I believe it was going to, it was, for the most part, the way that season was playing out, it was like us in Montreal that were going to be
exactly.
Like really heavy hitters that year. But I mean, Frank Thomas was just absolutely devastating every baseball that he found. You know, pitching was there. Everything was just kind of coming together.
And the team was set for the World Series. They had gotten their jitters out the year before against the Blue Jays. And I think they were ready to go. And that team started with the nucleus of four straight draft picks that were amazing at Old Comiskey, starting with Jack McDowell and Robin Ventura, then Alex Fernandez, and then Big Frank came in. Four in a row came up, and by the end of the season of 1990, they were all regulars. You know, Frank came up in August of that year. They put him first on the field on the road in Milwaukee, and it was electric. Like, you knew right away, this is the first time the White Sox had a star. And in my lifetime, and really since, they've never had a star like that, where he was on the cover of magazines. And, you know, they talked about him on SportsCenter, and he was in commercials. I mean, still to this day, that exciting team all kind of started at Old Comiskey, and it started to gel in 1990, which is really kind of the backbone of the documentary and the book, was that team that came out of nowhere to challenge the medically enhanced Oakland A's. And, you know, they came within striking distance, and but for some bad series in late August, they could have done it. And it was so wild to see that ballpark full, and it made you just ache in a lot of ways. Because I always wanted to see his championship at that ballpark and hear what it would be like. The noise was insane. You'd have 3,000 people on a September cold night, and you still would hear the noise because it was all trapped with the structure of the stadium. And that was kind of sad. It's like they almost made it, but they didn't. And while it was awesome that they finally won the World Series, and I was there in Houston, and it was amazing, nothing like what it could have been at Old Comiskey. One of the crazy things I learned about in my research for this book is that no team ever won a championship at Old Comiskey other than one. I'm actually wearing this shirt today, and your listeners can't hear it. The Chicago Cardinals in 1947. The White Sox won in 06. Down the street at Old Southside Grounds when they beat the Cubs. Remind all your Cub fan friends. And then they won in the Polo Grounds in 1917. Never again to win in Old Comiskey. The Chicago American Giants, who were like a stalwart in the Negro Leagues, never won at home any of their championships. Chicago Sting won on the road and neutral sites in Toronto. So it's crazy. The only team that ever got to celebrate victory in that ballpark were the Chicago Cardinals. And it's kind of sad to think about, you know, that never really happened, which was a sort of the bittersweet thing in the end.
I think it's insanely clear what a huge Sox fan you are in general and how many memories you have. And, you know, even if you didn't get to see the ultimate memory of them winning a World Series at home, you know, you've talked a little bit about some of your favorite parts of the ballpark. Do you have any favorite memories that really stand out for you from your years at Comiskey Park?
Yeah, I think about, and it kind of comes to the person who wrote the foreword. It's a really weird kind of concept. There was a game in 88 or 89 where it was a meaningless game late in the season. Maybe 10,000, 12,000 fans were there. and the Sox were down because Dave Kingman had hit two big home runs, and they scratched back in the ninth inning on the strength of an Oscar Gamble home run, who had come back to the team, and a Carlton Fisk home run, and then one on a slap bunt by Ozzie when he was probably 25, 27 years old. And it was just the most amazing thing. He just had this scrappy little slap bunt, and the stadium went wild. You know, they put off the fireworks for that. Everyone's singing na, 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 na. And I talked to Ozzie about it when we were discussing the foreword for this book. And he remembered that day vividly. He knew what had happened and whatnot. And it was one of those moments where it's like just a special feeling where it all comes together. You get to see the scoreboard go off. You get to see a comfort behind when you hear the song. You see passionate baseball fans. I think we all know that the South Side's generally where the passionate fans are, and the North Side a little less so. And that's always been the case, and maybe even more so then. And that was one of those memories. You know, it's just like the scoreboard and combined with Nancy playing was a real special thing that always brings back memories. And getting to meet her and get to know her in the process of this book, and the entire afterword of the book is about Nancy Faust. And beyond just like being a great organist, and is about really what a great person she is and how instrumental she is to White Sox fans, young, old, through the generations. She is the living embodiment, she and Ozzie, of the old ballpark. Both having, you know, Nancy played there for decades. Ozzie got 5 years in before the park was gone. So those are the things that really stick out in my brain prior to, of course, the absolutely memorable final season.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Nancy Faust, the scoreboard, the fireworks. It's everything that made that ballpark so great. I was born in 1997, so I have even fewer memories, or was even farther from Duke. But from what I've heard and what I've read and seen, those were parts of what made that ballpark so great. So I understand why that's, even for a random game, it's the memory that sticks out for you.
Yeah, yeah. There was a smell to the ballpark. I've talked to a lot of the folks that had been there. We all kind of agree there's a smell. It's first of all, 80 years of beer. So, you know, it was always called the world's largest outdoor saloon. So you have that 80 year beer smell, 80 years of hot dogs and onions, grilled onions and fresh popcorn. And it just sort of soaked in, you know, the cigar smoke. Because back in those days, you know, you came home, and even if you're a 6 year old kid, you reeked of cigar smoke and beer. And those smells, you know, they're just, the new ballparks don't have that. They all kind of have that antiseptic, clean smell. I remember the first time I went and saw the floor in the bathroom at New Comiskey. I'm like, it just feels so different. It's like a hospital compared to the old ballpark. And all the new ballparks are like that. You know, the troughs are long gone. I know they still have them in some places, but Comiskey had these sort of porcelain troughs with a cool sign over one of them where it was a lower trough and it said future White Sox fans. It was actually one of the deleted scenes in the movie that I'm glad I caught that quote and put it in the book. And like there was this, you know, bathrooms along each side where like the little Sox guys, they went to, you know, be part of the team. So it was a special place. You know, you don't see it in the new ballparks anymore.
So I actually have a question about sort of that feel from old versus new. You kind of got into it, and it's something you actually have on your blog, which we'll get into in a little bit. You write, one of the best ways to understand the culture and fabric of a place is through its sporting arenas and stadiums. So how does the culture, the fabric of New Comiskey Guaranteed Rate Field compare to that of Comiskey Park? And, you know, we've talked a little bit about the new stadium and kind of your thoughts on it. What would you like to see recaptured in that new stadium on top of that?
Well, it's interesting. So if I talk about it capturing a place, part of it is the architecture and the architectural choices. And quite sadly, Chicago is a city that has torn down a lot of great architecture over the years in all walks of life, be it civic buildings, churches, et cetera. And New Comiskey represents that, unfortunately. You know, tearing down the old in the favor of the new, from, you know, by the boomer generation, and, you know, modernizing it and corporatizing it in a lot of ways. And that's the way, listen, the Sox are not alone. All the ballparks are like that, and that's never going to go away. But the one thing that I want to see is something that's present in Pittsburgh for those fans who've never been to PNC Park, it's a gem of a ballpark. And the reason it is it embraces the neighborhood and its surroundings in a way that I think the South Loop project could do just magnificently. It invites in that case, the river. The South Loop project would do it as well by allowing fans and tourists to come on riverboats. I think it'd be so cool. It embraces the skyline. So you see the skyline, you see what's great about Chicago, the architecture coming in. From the pictures that I've seen, and I got to check it out when I next get to town, it almost feels like the Sears Tower is leaning on the new ballpark in a certain way. That's another park. But the thing about PNC Park that's really cool is that they modernized the cantilevered upper deck concept, where the upper deck hangs over the lower deck. The problem with New Comiskey and a lot of the new ballparks and arenas and stadiums is that because you no longer want those supporting beams in front of the fans, you want them behind and supporting the levels. It pushes the levels up. Then you throw in two levels of skyboxes and a level of club level seats that almost all stadiums have now. And it pushes that upper deck far back and far up into the sky. And I'm sure you guys have heard the stat. The last seat of Old Comiskey is closer than the first row of New Comiskey to home plate. And Comiskey's not entirely alone in that. New Comiskey, I should say. And so the thing that they did in Pittsburgh is they right-sized it. They have only 38,000 people, which is really the proper size. They have a roof deck that overhangs. And I really do appreciate that they did that at New Comiskey in the early aughts. Like, that changed it. But the fans are closer. The skyboxes are tucked away a little bit. I'm sure they're still great and have great views, but it provides some shade and it provides an intimacy where you're close to the field. The noise resonates more. You feel like you're part of the game. Those are the real big elements that I think need to be captured. There's always going to be the restaurants and kids areas and whatnot. And I think those are good in a lot of ways. Now that I'm a parent, I realize that kids can't sit still, and I never could. That's why I roamed around with the camera. So those are the things that I would love to see. I'd like to see also, a little more organ music back in the park. But other than that, I like the South Loop idea. I think that if I were to design it, I'd tweak a couple things. I'd bring back the arches. I thought the arches were a distinctive element of Old Comiskey that really made it special and allowed the neighborhood to see in and the fans to see out to the neighborhood. I'd like to see a different facade than they're proposing, but I generally like the design. I think it evokes a lot of Old Comiskey.
So obviously, kind of one of the big things that really drives a lot of what you've done with like talking about Comiskey Park is just how unique it was, really, of an experience, especially compared to what you see at ballparks now. You just spent quite a bit of time talking about PNC Park, and you're not alone in that, by the way. There's a lot of people who very much will put that up as like their favorite ballpark. I even have a buddy who went out to Pittsburgh on vacation. Why I'd go to Pittsburgh on vacation is a completely different question, but regardless, he's not a baseball fan, but he always comments on how beautiful of a stadium that is. If you have a very short list, what are some stadiums you think that maybe somewhat compare and say intimacy or just like overall like vibe with Old Comiskey?
Well, there are a couple still in the world that you can see. And one of my favorites is Rickwood Field in Birmingham, Alabama. It was built actually 2 months or a month and a half after Old Comiskey in 1910. And you go there and I almost was like weepy, like feeling the ghost, because you see the same kind of architecture. They're actually holding a major league game there in June this year. That's one. Another crazy great one that I went to was Koshien in Japan near Osaka, where the Hanshin Tigers play. They're sort of the Boston Red Sox of Japan compared to the Tokyo Giants, which are the New York Yankees. They play in a ballpark that's from the 20s, 1924. It has ivy in the outfield. Babe Ruth had done some barnstorming there at one point. And again, you feel that sort of old kind of steel and concrete feeling. A stadium that I miss that I really wish they had done something similar with Old Comiskey is Arsenal Stadium in London, which is commonly known as Highbury. So Arsenal Soccer Club or Arsenal Football Club played there from 1913 till 2005, I think it was. And it had a lot of similar features to Old Comiskey in the way that it was structured. And what they did there is when they moved about a mile and a half away to a park that a stadium that feels a lot like New Comiskey Park in a way, they kept the old stands and converted it into apartments to flats. And where the field, the pitch used to be, is now a garden where people can grow things or kids can play. So people can still walk down the street and see what fans saw in 1913 with the facade and kind of feel like, okay, maybe we're not going to go there to see a game, but you kind of get a sense of where it's like, it devastates me that they didn't keep something of Old Comiskey, maybe the center field bleachers, maybe a little bit of, you know, one of the arches and turned it into a museum or something or a restaurant. You know, I would have loved for you guys to have seen that architecture. What is it like to see a brick ballpark? And that's kind of a bummer for me. But there are still a few out there, you know, in the minor leagues. Now, ironically, one of the greatest modern ballparks is the White Sox AAA facility in Charlotte. It is right downtown. It's got an amazing view of the skyline. Again, like the upper deck hangs over the lower deck. So they took that concept and modernized that and brought that to Chicago. You get kind of the South Loop project, and that excites me. When I first went to a game there, it blew me away. I'm like, how cool would it be to have one of the best skylines in the world be the backdrop for White Sox games? It makes, you know, being in an upper deck a lot more bearable. So
yeah, and I think that's like one of the biggest gripes a lot of people have had with the newer ballpark is just really the skyline behind it with where home plate set compared to where home plate was set with Old Comiskey, where you really don't get much of the skyline. You know, it's more or less like the more rural area of like Chicago, kind of on the outskirts, which, you know, nothing wrong to be said with that, but you really just don't get the feel of you're in Chicago.
Yeah,
when you look into the backdrop of
it's a shame. Like I have a segment on New Comiskey in the book, and I have photos of 1991 when it debuted, and then another one, I think it was 03, and then one from last year. And you see how that backdrop did change. Before you guys were born, there were the Robert Taylor housing projects that were there, which was notably where Mr. T grew up. And those were like a skyline in a way, but not a good one. Like those were dreaded housing projects. They weren't good for the folks that lived there. They were unsightly. They've since been torn down and put new, you know, mixed use residential there, which I think is great, but it's not a good backdrop for, again, a city that has a skyline that is jaw dropping that you get from Soldier Field. And, you know, it was a shame they couldn't take advantage of it. I've heard stories about soil conditions and they had to orient the ballpark the way they did. I imagine that those soil conditions could have been overcome with money, but there was limited money at the time, and the way the ballpark was financed, I'm sure they had to value engineer it and face it the more cheaper direction, which is, unfortunately, given your whole generation and for 30 years, Sox fans, kind of an inferior view. So it would be nice to finally correct the wrongs of what happened with New Comiskey. And I think that the South Loop project does it in many ways. I mean, I'm giddy for it. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I really do think especially that part's a shame because, like, in a lot of ways, it being the park that I grew up in, I have, like, a bit of a hold to New Comiskey Park, maybe a little bit more than some people do. And a lot of it is just being able to go to the games when I was younger. My uncle had box seats, so we always got to get really good seats, you know, right next to the third baseline. And, you know, I just have so many stories from there. You know, like my dad, one of the earliest memories I ever have of being a White Sox fan was my dad talking to Maglio Ordonez when we were up to bat and being like, hey, if you get the next fly ball, toss it up so I can give it to my son. Sure enough, Mags gets the third out, runs back to the dugout, throws the ball up, hits my dad in the hand, and he drops it.
I had a lot of memories like that. I had a lot of near misses on balls. I used to vend at New Comiskey and at Wrigley. For the first three seasons, I was a vendor when I was in college. And I've been to New Comiskey more than I was ever at Old Comiskey because I was there every day for three summers straight. And, you know, there are memories. There are some great memories. But I just feel like there was something lost. You know, like there's this great time where Robin Ventura had a grand slam, a walk-off grand slam. And I saw the video recently, and it's just wild seeing him kind of trot through this cement ballpark with those Cub blue seats. And, you know, it just, it feels like it just wasn't quite right. It was like a movie set in the wrong place. Now those memories were great. And they had, listen, they've had some amazing seasons in the new ballpark. Listen, we won the championship while they were playing there. So I'll never forget that. I mean, that was one of the most amazing things. I remember sitting there in Minute Maid Park, thinking about how weird this is. It's like they're playing a team called the Astros in a different park that's now a National League, or now an American League team. And they no longer at Old Comiskey, and it's a totally different vibe. And, you know, it felt like it was the same team, but a different team. You know, so it's your memories, though, do make it what's special. You know, that's your memories. You're always going to have those memories with your dad. And Sox fans have a personality that is definitely carried over. I mean, it's Sox fans are never really going to be much different, because there's always that feeling of not being the beloved little cute team up north. So it's always going to be part of Sox identity.
And when Duke turns and says, you know, things like the memories and some people are going to miss it more than others, he's talking about me, who is very much like, I like the new shiny toy.
Yeah.
It's something I've actually grown better into as I've gotten older, is an appreciation for the history and the architecture and all of that stuff. And it comes from people who have that appreciation, like you and Duke, you as well, who are willing to share it and give a different opinion other than me. And what's the shiny new toy they can build in the South Loop. Though at the same time, it is good to hear that you think, at least in that plan, they're trying to capture parts of what made Comiskey Park so great.
Yeah, I do. I think that there's a lot that could be gained there. I think having it within walking distance of the Loop, you know, office life will never be the same as it was pre-COVID. But to have people be able to walk it from their offices, or take a train in relatively easily from any part of the suburbs or the city, and then be able to walk from Union Station or Northwestern Station, I think that'll be great. I think the concept of being able to, you know, be a tourist, come in and get on a riverboat and go there, I think that'd be really cool. I think that'd be a fun area to celebrate after, hopefully, you know, wins more often than not. And I could see everyone like going by the river and celebrating. There's so many new traditions that could be created that are sort of lost in a field of parking lots in Bridgeport. Like, it doesn't really invite in Bridgeport, the ballpark, the way it used to. And I'm sure you've heard the stories of McCuddy's, and I was too young to go to McCuddy's, but I knew what it was like, that like, it was right there. Like, you could go, you could jump out of the ballpark and be in McCuddy's in like 75 feet. And there's all these rumors of players over the years going to do it and getting, you know, the famous chili dog MVP story with Dick Allen, and supposedly Babe Ruth used to get hot dogs over there. You know, those things you could get back in some ways by being in kind of a ballpark neighborhood. And I think that could be really cool. I'm a real estate attorney by my day job. So that side of me sees a lot of areas where that could be really good for a lot of folks. You know, how cool would it be to like live in an apartment and be able to walk or see New Sox Park from your apartment? You know, it's parts that are going to be a little different, but a lot of things would, I think, make that team kind of more part of the conversation in baseball. You know, maybe their World Series victories wouldn't be forgotten on ESPN as often, or things like that, or people forget that they had a longer curse than the Red Sox. So, you know, it'd be nice to be slightly more relevant, although never too relevant.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's a time-honored tradition to be forgotten about, even though we went 11-1, one of the best World Series runs ever. But
four complete games and the pennant run, but we'll leave that aside.
Yeah, you know, I'll never forget, you know, Boomer on ESPN on the call during the Red Sox series, and him just being so miserable the games we were winning, and I just loved every second of it, because he very obviously wanted the more marketable team to get the win. As we mentioned, you now run a blog called Stadium Vagabond. What was your motivation for starting it, and what should people expect to find on it?
Yeah. You know, for years I've been taking photographs of stadiums. I was I may have mentioned before, I was a college photographer at Michigan and got to photograph, you know, all the Big Ten campuses. And I was really lucky because that was during the Fab Five era. So I got to follow them all around to the Final Four. And I fell in love with photographing stadiums. And since then, I've photographed, this is going to sound crazy, over 2,300 stadiums. Not always games, but I like to sneak in. If I go, you know, travel around, go to a college campus, get their baseball, their basketball, their hockey, their football, whatever. And for years, people were like, you got to do something with this. And I didn't have time until COVID. And then at the time, I was transitioning jobs. I was going to start doing some interviews in March of 2020. Not a great time to do it. And my wife said, why don't you finally do something now with your photos? Why don't you do a book? And I decided, well, first I want to figure out my writing style and what I want to do. And what I started to do was this blog where I do long form articles about either a particular event that I go to or a particular new city or region that I'm going to or a special new stadium. Like I did a long piece on SoFi when that came out. I did a 7-part or 6-part piece about the Field of Dreams game and really kind of soaked in all of Iowa. Like I roamed all around the state, went to the, you know, all the minor league ballparks, went to the state fair, got to go to the game and got just great photos of Tim Anderson doing the stalk-off home run. And so what I like to do is just share my photos and stories, not of the X's and O's and who won and lost, but what do the ballparks smell like? You know, what was it like? Where'd you go to eat afterwards? What was the one hot dog stand you had to get to? You know, what was it like to see this ballpark before it opened and it was empty? You know, things like that I like to talk about. And I also like to share my photos in social media, which I do every day, of stadiums from throughout the world, old, new. I've been doing this since 1982. So I've done 4 decades plus of travel. Anytime I travel, I take my friends, my wife, my kids, my go on my own, and I'll just venture around and photograph stadiums and gather stories and now take notes on my phone. For example, like right after COVID ended, not ended, but when I got vaccinated and they started to open up stadiums again, I went on a 9-day road trip through Ohio and Pennsylvania and Kentucky and Indiana, the places that opened up a little sooner for fans, and ended up seeing 128 stadiums in 9 states in a 7-day trip. I think I had 3,700 miles. I counted 13 fast food bags in the back seat, 0 speeding tickets, knock wood. And so like, those are the types of trips I do. And then I write about them. And for that, I shared what it was like to get back to the ballpark after COVID, you know, in social distancing times and things like that. So those are the things that I like to share. And I hope to do more books. My next book is going to be about all the stadiums in Chicago from today and in the past. I lived during kind of the last of the old ones and then the beginning of the new ones. So I've got great photos of old Soldier Field and Chicago Stadium and all the college university stadiums from throughout the state, which are also a big part of the sporting landscape of the Midwest. And then I may go on and do a similar book for other cities that I've gone to a lot of sporting events over the years. I live in Boston now, so I've got a lot of those as well. So I'm going to, you know, see how this book goes, and the process is arduous, but it's a lot of fun living those memories again and going through those old photographs.
You know, you put a lot of work into all this, and it's very clear. It's like I've said before, the passion, the emotion, just the detail you put into everything is very, very clear. And you've also talked about, you know, not only your memories, maybe the memories for those who were there to witness Comiskey Park, but also wanting to make sure that those of us who are younger and didn't get to experience it still feel the same passion and energy and joy in the way that you had when you were younger. I guess my final question about all of this and sort of the work you've put in and all of the work you continue to put in, both the blog and the book itself, you know, if you had, it's a hard question, but if you had a target audience or someone you really wanted to see really get the most out of what you're doing, you know, when you sit down and you write and you put this all together, who are you really trying to speak to?
It's kind of two different people. it's people who are using it to kind of tickle their nostalgia brain, nostalgia part of their brain, the folks who are my age and older, but also folks who are younger who like to travel, who like to experience games and really not just kind of on the field, but off the field in that experience and get into the architecture and the different styles of stadiums. I love when I get like a teenage kid or a 20 something kid ask me questions that I think is like just kind of self-evident because I live through and they ask me questions and they're shocked by it. I love sharing that information because for better or worse, I've got this encyclopedic knowledge of old stadiums and ballparks and my family could not be more sick of hearing about it. So it's good to find folks that actually do like to hear about it and like to, you know kind of the culture of sports. That's sort of, you know, goes back to what we said before is I think that you learn about the culture of sports by going to different stadiums. You know, you learn their music, their foods, their architecture, their personality. Are they sarcastic? Are they friendly? Are they sappy? You know, what are the little local traditions? What are the seventh inning stretch routines? What are the scoreboard races or mascot races that they have? You know, I'll start with the great CTA bus race when they finally had a digital scoreboard at Old Comiskey in 1982. That was the first one that I recall that ever occurred in the city. So like, you know, I like to really give kind of that flavor to people who both want to remember what it was like, but give a time machine to those folks who didn't get a chance to see those old ones or even just new ballparks and stadiums. You know, I try to hit everyone during their first season and now write about them. And I like to draw links to the past. You know, I like to say, well, where did the Rams used to play? You know, the Rams started back in Cleveland at Old Municipal Stadium. Like, I don't think a lot of Ram fans know that or that, you know, the Cardinals spent decades at Comiskey Park losing games there before they went on to lose in Arizona. You know, so those things are fun. Like, I used to love tying those things together back in the old days, pre-internet and what you would get. Now you can get the information at your fingertips, but I don't know, something about sharing what the feeling is like is something I like to do. I like when people enjoy my work in one way or another, whether it's my writing, which I think, you know, is developing and evolving. I'm trying to get away from writing like a lawyer, or my photography, which is not, you know, Sports Illustrated level photography. But what I do is try to capture the essence of what it was like at a particular game. So that's really what I like to share with folks. This book in particular, I just really love the notion of Sox fans either getting to know a ballpark they didn't get to experience or reliving it and bringing back those memories. I wish I could do a scratch and sniff and could like get that smell of the old ballpark somehow there. That would have been something I'm sure my publisher would have loved to have heard about, that I wanted to pursue that. That's really what I try to do with my blog in this book.
Yeah, well, I don't speak for everybody, obviously, because not everybody's, you know, as interested in like stadiums and you know, this type of thing. But there is definitely a crowd, and I'm part of it, where I just love hearing about old stadiums, you know, whether it starts from how they were built, the era they were built in, because you could see it. You know, there was the years of like mixed use stadiums. There was the years of, you know, the original dome run and how bad those ended up being because they just were not built to last. The first retractable domes, I'm a sucker for it. I've got like six YouTube channels that I watch of just old stadiums. My fiance sometimes will be like, "What are you doing? Why do you just watch this for hours?" And I'm like, "You just wouldn't get it."
I get caught down that rabbit hole. I'd love to do more videos now with the parks, but I just haven't had the bandwidth with the book. But that's something I'd love to share because, you know, I like to do these series on the old ballparks, in particular ballparks, but also a lot of old basketball arenas. Those had a lot of charm too. That's been sucked out of the life in modern arenas. But yeah, it's the folks that dig it really get into it. You know, there's a passionate crowd. I go all around the world and there are tours of almost every ballpark, stadium, arena, and they're often filled and sold out and people of all ages. And it's just a cool way to experience another stadium or a ballpark because you get to see the behind the scenes. I don't think they ever had those at Old Comiskey. I got a little taste of it because I had a press pass for one day in 1990, from my student newspaper. And I got to see the locker room in some, you know, the Bard's room. I can't believe I didn't take a photo of it. Maybe they didn't allow it at the time. But that's where, you know, where Bill Veeck used to hold court for all the press and gathered dignitaries. But yeah, it's fun. It's fun to share those little like details of the park because they're the character of each city. You know, they represent a time. And unfortunately, New Comiskey was at a time that was when everyone thought Royals Stadium was the best stadium that had ever been built for baseball. And the White Sox got a modern Royals Stadium in the south side of Chicago the year before Camden was built. So,
man, yeah, it's what could have been. So, Ken, it's been great talking with you. I know you've got some exciting stuff coming up, especially with the book. Where can people find the book? Where can people find you? And what do you got planned moving ahead here?
Yeah, sure. So I'm at Stadium Vagabond on Twitter and every other social media out there. The book is available at lastcomiskeybook.com. You can also get a link from my website, stadiumvagabond.com. But the real exciting thing that we have coming up is we're doing a big book launch at the Chicago History Museum, just over the edge into enemy territory, but kind of neutral land, you know, over on Clark Street. And we're going to have Tom Scher, the former Channel 5 sportscaster, the first morning host on The Score. He's going to MC it. We have Ron Kittle, 1983 AL Rookie of the Year, who played in the final year of Comiskey. He's going to be there. Jack McDowell, who played for, I think, three seasons in Old Comiskey before going on to win the Cy Young in 93 at New Comiskey. He's going to be there. He actually started the first game at New Comiskey, and I can't wait to talk to him about that. And Don Paul, who was a pitcher at both Old and New Comiskey, but grew up in Evergreen Park and had the unique experience, maybe not unique, but close, of being able to pitch in a Comiskey park and then go drive home and sleep in his childhood bed back at his home. You know, so he's going to be there as well. And we're hoping to have Nancy Faust, if she can get healthy off of her bum ankle. The organist who should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame. So tickets are free. You just go to my website at lastcomiskeybook.com and send an RSVP. Tickets are free. No purchase is required, but we just ask that everyone send in their email. We want to make it a real great celebration of the old ballpark. I'd be remiss in saying that documentarian Matt Flesch will also be there, of course, to talk about his documentary. We're going to show a portion of the documentary. The book will be available, some Sox merch or Last Comiskey merch. And it's free for all Sox fans or any baseball fan for that matter. But we're hoping Sox fans come first. So
it's been a pleasure having you on, Ken. I'm going to try to RSVP. I want to make sure it works my schedule. I have a future White Sox fan on the way, so hopefully it can kind of fit in somewhere in there. But it's been great talking with you, buddy. And it's
great talking to you guys.
I'm assuming we're gonna cross paths down the road. We need to talk about Soldier Field down there. So
absolutely. That'll be part of my next book. I have strong opinions about Soldier Field. I like New Soldier Field. I wish. Think about this. If we could have had the Comiskey facade with a modern ballpark being embedded into it, I would take it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much, Ken.
So I have to say, that was definitely one of my favorite conversations I think that we've had on this podcast. One of the things I really love the most is being able to hear people's experiences with the Chicago White Sox. You know, I think it's really easy, and I fall into this trap. Everybody falls in this trap in this fan base about how much we hate the current product. And there's a lot about the current product to hate. There is absolutely no doubt about that. But the thing that will always keep me coming back as a White Sox fan, you know, whether it's me not going to games in particular, but something that will always make me proud to be a White Sox fan, is a lot of what you guys just heard in that interview with Ken. He really encapsulates the feeling of being a baseball fan, of being a Southsider, of being just being able to take in everything outside of the product on the field. You know, being able to go to a stadium with your parents, remembering the first time you went to a White Sox game. You know, your dad taking you to a game, or, you know, your mom taking you to a game, or just being able to eat a hot dog for the first time at a ballpark and actually getting a good hot dog compared to, you know, the store-bought stuff. Like, it's those small things that will always bring me back to being a White Sox fan at my very core. And it's why I'll never waver. Genuinely. It's how can you not be romantic about baseball? I know that's a term that gets memed a bit, but it's so true. And genuinely, this is one of my favorite conversations. This is one of my favorite episodes because it really just encapsulates, you know, being able to understand why somebody has so much unrelenting loyalty to a baseball team that's currently on path to be one of the worst in history. It's the Chicago White Sox, man. And being able to hear about a stadium that my dad went to growing up, you know, my dad getting to go into the stadium free as a kid because Bill Veeck let kids in for free after a certain point in the game. Bill Veeck walking around the stadium, giving them free popcorn, giving them free hot dogs, because every kid has to have a popcorn and a hot dog at a baseball game. That's the type of stuff that will always keep me coming back. Jerry Reinsdorf can't ruin that. And yeah, genuinely, that was great. Thank you a lot, Ken, for coming on. But ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have this week for the Sox on 35th podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to check out the website, SoxOn35th.com, as well as following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SoxOn35th. Stay up to date with yo, Chicago White Sox. It's been Duke Coughlin, joined by Jordan Lazowski. Nick Gower will be back eventually. We will be back next week as we cover another week of White Sox baseball. God help us. Thank you, and go Sox.
Yeah, maybe they'll give us something to talk about next week. Go Sox.